Welcome into the Jefferson My Drinks. I'm Hallam Monk and we are going over time and I'm joined by
Ian Harrison.
And we have a very special guest tonight.
Jonathan Homer.
Jonathan Homer. Who's Jonathan Homer and why are you here?
I am the head coach of the Manchester Titans American Football Club.
Which is a big deal really, isn't it? You are a big deal. Yeah. Why is it a big deal?
Because we are the two-time back-to-back undefeated British champions.
Back-to-back British champions?
Yep.
In Brit Bowl.
Yeah.
So you are the best American football team in the UK.
Yep.
For the last 2 years running.
That's correct, yeah.
Have you been beaten in that 2 years?
No. Completely undefeated.
Just smashing everyone?
Just pretty much, yeah. Yeah. It's been good time.
Yeah. when was the final? How long has it been now?
The final was middle of September. I want to say the 20th. So that's probably wrong. So that was down in Coventry, beat the London Warriors again. So that was 44-27.
Big win.
Yeah. I mean, it was we were behind going into the fourth and managed to pull away. But yeah, I mean, we beat them 37-7 last year as well. So good to beat them 2 years running. And last year we won, but we had a loss on our record. So kind of nicer to win it with the undefeated season this year as well.
Did that loss nag at you?
Did a bit for many reasons. At the time, I think it was reflective of how close us and Tamworth were. But you know, we dispatched Tamworth twice this season. So
yeah. Nice. Yeah, so talk to us about the Titans and how it's like structurally how it's set up.
We're the biggest club in the UK and have been for quite some time. You know, we're the only club that can boast a team in every competition that the governing body offers. So we have our senior adults team contact, senior women's team contact. We have two adult flag teams. We have a women's flag team, under 19s contact, under 16s contact. Then we have under 16s and cadet flag.
How many of those teams are you involved in?
These days, a lot less. These days, I'm just the head coach of the adult contact team, but I think at some point I have coached or played for pretty much every one of those teams.
Yeah, so just a bit of context, for when me and Hallam played for the Titans, Homer was pretty much involved in literally every team going at the Titans.
Yeah.
He was there 7 days a week, basically, and there was nothing he didn't do.
Yeah, I was, you know, waiting to get divorced. I had time on my hands, didn't I? But in a loving relationship now, so it's much better. No, that sounds terrible. I played for the Titans from pretty much inception of the club through to, I mean, realistically 2011, and in 2012 when I became GM, you know, we had the adult team, we had kind of effectively a failing under 19 team, just because it hadn't been supported properly by the club. So a lot of it was by necessity. You know, we wanted to start under 16s. Well, I'll have to coach it. Then we want to start a women's team. Well, you're going to have to coach it. You want to start a flag team? Well, unfortunately, Rick and Alan coached that. But you'll have to play because we haven't got enough people. Like, okay. So, you know, and the same thing when we set up like cadet flag. So I think all of these teams, it's been a necessity for me to coach it. And then over years, we've managed to find people to come in and step into roles. So now Twiggy's chairman now. You know, we've got new head coaches throughout the club. So it's allowed me to refine my role, let's say.
Yeah.
So just on sort of the support there, so how do you find the sort of the support towards the Titans? Do you get people coming down to watch the games? How can they come and sort of support the Titans? And is there any maybe sponsorship opportunities for anyone that's listening?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we play our home games at the National Speedway Centre at Bellevue. Generally, we'll get, you know, between 300 or 400 people down. You know, for the larger games, we've touched nearly 1,000. You know, when we stream, you know, our games this year had over 70,000 viewers combined. Across the games that we stream, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, and that's on YouTube.
That's on YouTube.
I've watched a couple of games on YouTube.
We only streamed 3 out of the 7 games we played. It's home games we played. So to get those kind of viewership numbers is huge. You know, as reigning champions now, we're going to get to play in Europe this year in the Central European Football League, which is effectively like a Champions League across Europe. Yeah, and we are looking for club sponsors now. We have some really good sponsors this year. But, you know, we're looking to recycle and renew now in the new year. And obviously, we need to fund this European campaign. Fund the continued growth of the club. So, you know, people want to check out our socials, check out our Instagram and our Facebook, search for Manchester Titans. All our information's on there, and get in touch.
Any specific sponsors you want to give a shout out to?
And we SWS were our main sponsors for the course of the season. They've supported us for the last 2 seasons, been really, really positive. And actually, it's that kind of help. The club is run through member sponsorship, member subscriptions, and that effectively just pays for, you know, it pays for equipment, it pays for travel, you know, and it pays for pitch hire. And so for us to be able to grow, we need sponsors, because that's what allows us to invest in investing in equipment, so on and so forth. So yeah, so you know, I mean, S2S has been there for 2 years now, the main one. So yeah, so big shout out to them.
Do you get any funding from the government? Is it a government-funded sport?
It is not a government-funded sport, which, I mean, I don't know if that's
going
to change.
Even though flag is now going into the Olympics?
Yeah, I mean, potentially. I mean, I'm not close to that side of it massively, but, I mean, you would hope that there would be some funding from the governing body. Well, I mean, it's not Baffa's fault, from the government down, but, you know, we can apply to Sport England for grants, but there isn't a direct funding line now.
No. Just on that, how do you believe the American football in the UK is actually viewed, and what is kind of the setup of the UK sort of the setup for the UK American football?
The problem we have is that we're still way down the pecking order in sports in the UK, and it's still, I think, to your average sports fan in the UK, it's still, you know, it still has a little bit of a stigma. It's rugby with pads, so on and so forth. Obviously the visibility of the NFL and now college football on Sky, you know, the international series games helped to really raise the profile of the sport way in advance of what it was when you know, just the three of us were playing together. That's only like 5 years ago. So the profile of the sport's huge, but I think the profile of domestic game is still very, very low. And I think we're hindered by a couple of things. One is that we don't have an elite professional or even semi-professional league, which we could easily sustain in this country. I think that the base standard of players in this country is far in excess of the majority of places in Europe. But we don't have that semi-pro league where you can, you know, you've got a television deal and you can import players, and that's what's holding us back. And I think ultimately, the problem we have now is that all our best players go to Europe or they go to Canada. And so actually the standard is waning slightly, maybe.
So with you going into this European league now, yep, the UK champions, which team in Europe do you think has the best setup, and who's the strongest one?
You can't say.
Well, I do generally think.
I'm not asking you to go in on Baffa.
Obviously you've got the European, you've got the EFL, ELF, I always get them mixed up. You've got the European League of Football or whatever, which is professional. And obviously they're importing players from across Europe and from North America. And that's at a standard that's far above and beyond. But I think there's a real misperception of what American football is like across these Europeans, because we have players that sign contracts. Like, we had guys go to the GFL this year, which is meant to be the best league in Europe, in Germany. We've had players go to Scandinavia and they come back. And it's like, what it's like? It's like, well, 20 players turn up to training. Nobody really cares. The coaching isn't that good. Just loads of people turn up at the weekend and watch. And actually, it's not, from an American football perspective, it's not that good an experience.
It's well supported, but it's not as good a standard.
Yeah, precisely. It looks better because you've got five or six Americans on the pitch, and you've kind of, I mean, to the point I've just made, you know, our best players play in Germany. They don't play here for us. Tom Jones, prime example, our running back, plays
he was
in
an
Germany.
Academy kid. Yeah.
Incredible player, plays in Germany. And we've got kind of maybe like a dozen guys that have come through us that now play in Europe, because they can get paid, which if you're a young guy, it's cool. But actually, you know, they come back and you ask them what it's like, and the feedback's always the same. So I will take a Pepsi challenge against our structure and our coaching setup and the quality of our practices and our film review and our film study against these teams across Europe. And I actually, you know, as we go into Europe, I'm genuinely confident that we can win.
So I was always under the impression, or I have been told historically, that the German league was the strongest, mainly on the basis that the Americans have so many army bases over there that it kind of filters down through the Americans playing. Is there any truth in that at all? Or?
I mean, that they import. I mean, it's the difference is that it's effectively a professional league for all intents and purposes. You know, they have proper sponsors. You know, the games are shown live. They get 10,000-12,000 people show up, which obviously creates revenue streams. Visually, it's a good league to play in. Like I throw it on the bus, but you know, I've had feedback this year that actually, you know, no one comes to training. It's very much a case of just learn the playbook on your own, and then everyone comes back together on the game day. And there are some top coaches, top players, top teams there, but I don't think it's that different to the game in the UK than people led to believe. And actually, this is why I said, if we were able to get, we don't even need a full TV deal or whatever, if we were able to get a semi-pro league here, like an elite franchise league, you only need maybe six teams, we could easily replicate and surpass that.
Yeah, and you probably need some kind of link with the NFL as well for that. Feeder clubs.
NFL, CFL, CFL would do it fine. Even if you just linked into the European clubs, the European league clubs, I think it would work. But even as a standalone, if you could have those franchises, so, you know, I know you can have 30 domestic players and you can have 5 North American imports, 10 European imports. Here's your product, show it on the telly, get people to come and watch.
Yeah, like the old European football league. Exactly. You can only have so many foreigners.
Yeah. And that would easily work. Yeah.
Would that be the change that you would, or if you had the power to do it, that would be what you want to do?
We're not that far away in the UK, actually. I hoped it was going to happen this year for 2024. Yeah. We put our name in and we're basically told, yes, you will get a franchise, but the league hasn't kicked off because not everybody's into it.
Yeah.
Typical infighting, and maybe we don't quite have the, I don't know if it's funding or kind of the exposure we need in terms of the media to generate revenue right now. But if somebody offers it to me, the Manchester Titans would be in it straight away.
Do you feel like because of the way the Titans are, and because when me and Ian played, especially, we all, like, whenever we went to games, we always felt we were a step ahead. I mean, we're going to come on to the coaches and things like that in a little while, but even with coaches, we felt we were ahead of most other teams. Is that something that you feel with, like, the development of your YouTube and streaming and things like that? Are any other teams doing that at the moment or not?
Yeah, I mean, teams are doing it sporadically around the country. You know, there are teams that have elements of really good setups in terms of, you know, good media, good streaming, good home venue, so on and so forth. You know, we're fortunate we've been able to pull it all together. We've got to play in a stadium, we have a great venue, we've got the media side, absolutely. I think we're miles ahead with media, what Alex Cooper and the guys do. You know, we've got the Blue Milk TV that runs alongside and everything else that we do. So actually, we've got all the pieces and the components there, and that allows us to take strides. Actually, what that does then is that, you know, we had it this season, we had guys, because we've got a huge squad, guys don't get game time, we had guys transfer away and then come back and be like, it's absolutely
not the same experience.
It's absolutely, I was going to swear then, I don't know what the PG rating is in the podcast, it's absolutely terrible elsewhere.
But if you swear, Pete has to tick a box on Spotify to make it, to list it as explicit.
Yeah, like, they would rather be with us knowing that the practice is structured, they're going to get coached, they're going to get the film review, and they're going to have more fun Sunday, Wednesday in the practice cycle than they are playing lower standard football.
Yeah, and I think when I was playing especially, I thought playing amateur American football was essentially a full-time job.
Yeah.
Because you'd train, then you'd have film to review, and it was taken. The standards at the Titans are so incredibly high.
Yeah.
That you are expected to do all of this as a minimum.
You say,
and all of this affects your position on the depth chart.
You say the standards were high, but you did see me play, so you know, it wasn't that high.
No, the standards are high to actually get on the field.
Oh, yeah, yeah, don't do
anyone
that.
Can sign on.
I still made a tackle in the final, so that's all I care about.
Yeah.
But that was one of the most surprising things to me.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, when Carlton came in, the workload just increased massively for anyone that even wanted to set foot on the field. We increased the standard, and he said, right, this is the baseline.
Yeah.
If you're not doing your film review, you're not getting on the pitch.
I mean, Luke is playing, for all intents, a professional American football coach. You kind of, Luke, I mean, the same problem I am in is that, you know, he's got a life here, so he can't go and earn what is not a huge wage to coach around the world at our level, as it would be. But I think what we did, and what kind of, you know, that kind of 2017 paradigm shift we had with Luke and those guys coming in, is actually a culture was established that I was fortunate to be able to take over and build upon, that actually everybody knows, and everyone coming into the club knows, to your point, you know, you have to be in the gym. If you're not in the gym, you're going to get left behind. You have to be at training, which you're going to get left behind. You have to be seen to be doing film review. You have to learn your playbook. You can't just turn up on a Sunday and be like, all right, am I playing? It's like, nope.
No.
You can stand and watch.
It's basically amateur football with a professional approach.
Yeah.
And if you're not putting the work in, and you're letting your teammates down, and you won't be setting foot on the field.
Yeah, and I think that's now shown by how far ahead we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just on that, so I do actually want to take you back to 2017. You were the head coach of the under-19 team at that time. Yeah. Did you believe at that point, and I know it was a game that I played in, or I say played.
Or you went to.
Yeah, I went to. I held the boards. Do you think after promotion from beating Leicester and then going on to win the Division 1 title against the Olympians, that you would ever be sat here going, we're back-to-back champions? With sort of, because obviously you saw the development of those under-19 players and the talent that you had there. Did you believe that the club could go that far as quickly as it has?
Not as quickly. I mean, it was never my intention to be head coach of the adult team, actually, genuinely. that came about behind the system, and we had somebody lined up and the guy dropped out like on the eve of the season. It was like, oh, we need to do it then. So I kind of I stepped across.
I mean, you have had all the roles, so why not?
I know, right? I've been very fortunate again that I got there. Did I think that we could win it as fast as we're going to? We lost the COVID year, and then the year after the COVID year, what it was like a regionalised league structure where we won 11 out of 11 games.
Yeah, actually. There was no travel, was there?
No, yeah, and so there was no national championship to win. The year after, I thought we were going to be very, very good. What did I truly think that we'd win it? In the back of my mind, probably not. I thought we'd get close. But to win it, actually, in the manner we did in the end over London was incredible. Going into this year, I was like, we are going to absolutely destroy everyone. There's no grey area in my mind. I thought it would take a little longer, but I did. I always believed that we would get there. Me and JD used to joke about it. We used to joke about how long it's going to take us. And it didn't take as long as we ever thought it would do.
Yeah. Well, what was the difference in your mind between winning it 1 year and then going to the second year and thinking, we're going to smash this?
I mean, there was loads of little asterisks against us that people could throw at us. You know, in London Warriors, for example, their QB got injured in the semi-final last year. Dee Williams didn't play in the final in 22, played in the final this year. So, like, little things like that, having the loss against Tamworth as opposed to being undefeated. And also, you know, one of the things we spoke about as a team was that actually there are quite a collection of teams with one Brit Bowl win. There's not many with two. And there's only, outside of London, if you take the Blitz, the Warriors, the Olympians out, only the Manchester Spartans, 89-90, outside of London, have ever won it twice or gone back to back. So you have to go all the way back to 1990 for a non-London team to have done it. So actually, it's the case of, you know, loads of teams have borrowed the trophy off these teams and immediately given back and then just dropped away, fallen away, disappeared.
Yeah.
So to not be a one-and-done team, to not be a flash in the pan, you know, everyone can, Leicester City, Blackburn Rovers, to use soccer kind of analogies, you know, Greece in the Euros way back. You know, it happens in sports, right, every now and again. But to be able to go back and prove it, and prove it so emphatically, that was actually the big motivating factor. You know, we asked guys in last year, 2022, it was like everyone was so laser focused on winning the Brit Bowl, there was no motivation issues. I didn't have to do anything as a head coach to motivate people. Start of this season, and maybe there was a few guys, they'd won the ring now, like, why have they come back? And we actually spoke, like, what is your why? Why have you come back? What is your reason for coming back? And as a team, it was those things, to replicate what the Manchester Spartans had done, to beat London Warriors with Dee Williams there, to go back to back, to lift ourselves. So we're now the fourth most successful team in Brit Bowl history, I think it is, something ridiculous like that, because we've won two.
Yeah.
Or tied, whatever it is. And now, for us now, it's Europe, the dynasty, like, it's ours now, and we're not.
So how are these European games going to fit in around the regular Brit Bowl season?
Really stressfully.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Baffert is supporting us, so there's four dates. So it's a four-round competition. We could very easily be one and done. I don't think we will. So it's the last 16, last 8, last 4, so on and so forth.
And again, there's no funding for this.
No.
At all. So you've got to pay for your own flights.
Yep.
Your own accommodation.
Yep.
Just to get out there and play a game of American football.
Yep.
Just because you're going to be the UK champions.
Yep, that's exactly it. Which we knew going in, so that this isn't a complaint. So this is why obviously we're looking for club sponsors now. You know, I'll happily change the name of the team to be the Jefferson Mydrinks podcast, Manchester Titans. Yeah, I mean, I say it semi kind of in jest, but actually, no.
You know what it cost? I'll pay for your flight.
It cost a lot. We have figures in our head of, you know, hypothetically, if we were to win the competition, what the total outlay would be. It would probably cost us around about $25,000 in total. Hypothetically,
per game.
No, if we were to win it.
Oh, to win it, to all four games.
All four games, because we're the lowest seed. Because there hasn't been a British team in the competition since 2018, I think it was.
Right. Okay, yeah.
So yeah, Tamworth. Yeah. And it was a slightly different structure then, because it was mini groups they played in. So they played in two or three games. So this is a straight knockout. So we're the lowest seeded team, rightly or wrongly. So we're guaranteed to play four away games.
Oh, great!
Brilliant.
Yeah, unless that changes and we get a home game, which obviously would be really welcome, some Saturday Night Lights action, which would be pretty cool. Yeah, we're going to have to go to four different places in Europe to play.
Yeah, plus it wouldn't just be a one-night stay either. It would be probably the night before.
Well, yeah, so...
And then the night of the game to go and celebrate or commiserate the loss.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'd have to fly out on the Friday.
Saturday, go out Saturday night, get leathered.
Come back Sunday. But then you've also got to get... You're not just travelling people, it's all the equipment. So it's the baggage, the luggage, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And realistically, we're talking a travelling party of 60 people.
Yeah, which airline was it that the Titans did?
Singapore.
Singapore Airlines, can't they?
Singapore Airlines. I don't know if Singapore Airlines fly to where we need to go to.
But they should make a detour now.
So it's just lend us a plane. Go to City to lend us that big head.
Yeah, there was a lot of players that never really saw any game time on that advert.
Yeah, so it is going to be. I mean, it's another challenge, but from our perspective, it's 100% what we need to do.
Yeah. Well. Just talk to us about the season you've had then. Talk about the divisional, and then your route to the final.
So we went 10-0. To be honest, we didn't win a game by less than 30 points. I mean, the season on paper started tough because we had Edinburgh away, Tamworth away, who were the teams that finished second and third in the division last year. So, you know, hypothetically, that was going to be our two toughest games back to back away, and we won 37-0, 35-0.
So yeah, and then you're 2-0 thinking
those are the two toughest games
in here
of the
now.
Season.
Yeah.
So our approach to the rest of the season is slightly different. We implemented kind of a blended rotation strategy where at no point did we ever have what you would refer to as maybe your starters on the field. So you might have we would start the game maybe with like three or four starters, three or four second string, a couple of third string, and we would almost have planned rotation. Like, we know we're going to win the game. We know we're going to win the game comfortably. More than likely, we're going to hit the mercy rule on the rolling clock. So how can we ensure that people get drive? So if I speak, you know, coaching the linebackers, you know, we'd effectively have five pairs of linebackers with everyone appearing twice, and each drive it cycles round. So, you know, everyone's getting three or four drives, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But that way, during the regular season, we were able to get, you know, the vast majority of the squad good game time. And then as it hit the last game of the season was Tamworth at home, where we flipped it back starters, and obviously then the semi-final against Bristol. I mean, Bristol at home last year was a weird game. You know, we were up at half time in the first half, they didn't get a single first down, and then in the second half, you know, they had because they were closely tied into the university down in Bristol, they had import American QB, import American receiver, import American running back, turns out those three kids could really play. and it was a really close game last year. This year again they had three or four Americans on the field. They had a running back who was incredible. But you know, we were able to, it was close at the start of the game, but we were able to really kind of stamp our authority and pull away and get control of them. So in the end, won the game relatively comfortably. We knew the final was going to be a lot tougher against London this year, because I think last year they massively underestimated us. And they didn't have their starting QB. So to have their starting QB playing with them now, a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, although that they came in 9-1 and not undefeated, it was a much closer game. I feel like we were in control, and then in the third we missed a field goal, muffed a punt, they scored twice quickly. So I think at the start of the fourth we were down 27-25.
I like that, going in on the kickers. Yeah. Love it.
Well, in fairness, it wasn't Lenny's
real
fault
people
to be
too,
fair.
Homer. We've said this.
Wasn't Lenny's fault to be fair, and in fairness, you know, Lenny. I mean, we scored three times really quick at the start of the fourth, and one of those was a turnover off a punt. You know, we punted and their gunner went downfield, and Lenny basically aimed the ball at him and hit him.
Oh, right.
And then the guy that our receiver who had muffed the punt earlier recovered it, so, and then he went on to score a touchdown. So there was kind of a nice kind of little redemption there. And actually, once we got our noses in front, you know, we were able to pull away, and you know, the last 8 minutes of the game was us just running the clock, which was nice.
Yeah. So we're talking about when you were playing Bristol and they had the American prospects coming over, and then the fact that London have won it consecutively since 1990, essentially.
Yeah.
Do you think that the Titans suffer geographically? Because there's a talent pool in London, and the people that come over from America to London to live, to work, do you think the Titans suffer geographically compared to London or somewhere that's got a university with links to the States?
Yes, to a degree, because there's not that immediate pool of people to pull players from.
Yeah.
You know, we have really strong links with all the universities, I think, now in the Northwest, Lancashire, Cheshire, Yorkshire, Staffordshire, all these unis, I would say, are our unis now. But none of those unis have programs that are importing players. I just not too sure Leeds Carnegie do. You know, Bristol are heavily linked with SGS, the Filton Pride full-time football college there. And they're heavily linked with UWE Bullets, who are just important guys left, right, and centre. It's ridiculous. And also, London has the huge catchment area.
Yeah.
I think what we've done now is that we have cornered American football pretty much in the north of England. Guys are willing to drive 2 hours twice a week to come and work with us now, because I think, you know, when we spoke about the start, we implemented a culture and a way of doing things that is professional. and to the point now where it's recognised and everybody knows it and understands it. And actually, from our perspective, you know, we get guys, and it's already started again for this year, guys are willing to transfer to us because I'm willing to put the travelling hours in, willing to travel from Sheffield, Barnsley, Coventry, Nottingham, Leeds, all these places, because they know that they're going to get a level of coaching and standard of American football and a competitiveness that's going to put them above. You know, the GB squad's got 18 Titans in out of the 53.
This is one of the questions that I was going to ask you. So back in 2022, I think it was, you had 12 players that were selected and your OC.
Yeah.
How, I guess, how proud were you of those players, those people? Because obviously we know Coach Carlton from when our playing days, and he was an incredibly talented coach. He knew how, not only how to get the best out of the players, but he understood exactly, you know, what was going on and how he was going to do it before even he sort of was able to relay the message. He knew the best players and everything like that. Did you feel, I mean, we're going back to 2017 here, and we thought that a few of the players probably deserved to be in that squad at that point. Do you feel like you're now getting the recognition that, I guess, the hard work of your coaches and some of the players deserve?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of a paradigm shift with GB, with Jason Scott taking over. In my opinion, Jason's the best head coach in the country. He's incredible. And I think he's created an environment now where actually legitimately he's removed who you play for from the equation. He just picks the best players. And I think historically that wasn't true. You had to play for one of these two or three clubs really to be.
How does the scouting get done for that?
Well, I mean, Jason isn't involved with a club. So he spends, I mean, he's head coach at University of Nottingham. And he does huge amounts of scout, I know, up and down the country, watching games.
No.
And then they have training events, and they have training events where they have, you know, 115 guys down, and it's a whole day session.
Like a combine, or?
Well, it's not so much a combine, it's that there's the GB training sessions out of game cycle, or have lots and lots of players so he can see them in person.
Yeah.
And then as you get close to the game, the squad shrinks until you get to the game squad, and then the cycle starts again. So it's a constant recycling of players, refreshing of players. I think from our perspective, I think, you know, it was for the Denmark game, I think it was 18 in total out of the plus three coaches now.
And again, that's you don't get any money towards that.
No, they don't. So the players had to fundraise themselves.
So all these European trips just for being good at American football, and they get no government funding for it at all. No. It's all self-raised. It's all sponsorship deals.
Yeah, I mean, but again, you know, I mean, I think in Manchester you kind of see it laid bare. And then you've got City United, you've got South Sharks, Salford Reds, Lancashire Cricket Club. You've got Manchester Thunder Netball. You've got Manchester Giants Basketball. You've got Bellevue Speedway. You've got Manchester Storm Ice Hockey. And then maybe you've got.
And then you got the Titans.
Then maybe you've got the Titans
at the end of the line.
Yeah, and I mean, I probably miss some professional sports out there. There's probably some, I don't know, there's probably other professional sports in the city, but there is a huge. I mean, you know, Sale Harriers been Sale, right? Athletic. There is a huge pecking order of sport in the country, and I think I understand. Most people who play modern football understand where we sit in that. It would be nice though if we could piggyback or in some way see reflected the amount that the NFL is investing in the country and the amount that American football is commercialised in the country now, with, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars and the UK Jags and JagTag and all this kind of stuff. You've got the NFL, the NFL Academy. There's obviously money in American football in the UK because, you know, we sell out four games a year like this. Some of that money needs to filter into the domestic game.
That's not a bad idea at all, actually.
Yeah, I do like that.
Yeah. So how are the teams looking for the season coming?
Well, we had an OTA a few weeks ago. We've got an OTA next Saturday. We're going to be extremely strong again. You know, we have the natural cycle of players. A couple of guys will leave the squad just through age or, you know, whatever they might be. But I think we're well positioned to pick up bodies again, like we have done in recent times. We've got a couple of guys coming back from Europe. We've got an ex under 17 who's been playing in Germany for the last 3 years, defensive tackle. It's just not going to be fair, to be honest. yeah, and I think there's a couple of players I think we're at risk of losing to Europe. But on the whole, we will go in as favourites, and I would expect us to win. Obviously, with the added wrinkle of playing in Europe, it would be interesting to see how that impacts us, because effectively, we're going to be playing in Europe on our bye weeks. So I think
yes, there's no rest days.
Yeah, precisely. Actually, we've already spoken about it, that you know, we could very easily put our egos at the front and run guys into the ground. And actually, you know, we should be prepared to say, maybe, you know, if we're playing in Europe this Sunday and we've got games the Sunday either side, then actually, you know, we restrict our starters. You know,
yeah.
And maybe so we win the game 20-12 or whatever it might be instead of 45-0. My ego's fine with that.
it's a win.
But even if we make the playoffs at 8-2 and not 10-0,
yeah,
my ego's fine with that as well. Okay. Because I understand now that we've got a squad that's probably 110-120 deep. I don't need to be driving the same 30 guys into the ground. We need to be using our squad and bringing guys up. So I think it'll have a slightly different feel this year because we have this added challenge of playing in Europe. But I think we're going to be really well placed.
Do you get any? I'm going to come on to you sort of personally here. Can you tell us about your personal development as a coach? And do you actually get any kind of coaching? Is there anything out there, or is it literally self-taught and case of studying? Is there anything that anyone can look into?
We have BAFCA, which is the British American Football Coach Association. They do have a program of coaching courses. You know, I did my level 2 coaching badge last year. But if I'm being perfectly honest, it was a box tick exercise. Just to say that I had it, I didn't really develop, but they do run coaching.
Like the FA badges, the first aid course and a couple of drills.
More or less. I mean, in fact, but yeah, I don't want to put the boot into BAFCA because, you know, they have to cater to the American football community as a whole, and actually what their primary, they have to make sure that, you know, people teach the basics of tackling and blocking and contact correctly. They're not concerned about whether I can teach, you know, a linebacker to pull a guard or something like that. That's way down on their list of priorities. You know, they're making sure that the game's safe,
making sure no one dies.
So, you know, so, but there is a huge online community that you can engage with. You know, listen to podcasts. You know, I read books. Subscribe to a couple of coaches online, and then, you know, you kind of get that online support and that online kind of development, and then you can, you know, I can go and find very targeted videos or seminars. As the AFCA, the American Football Coaches Association, that run online seminars all the time. So from my perspective, if I want to, because I try coach linebackers this year, which I, at this level, I've not done before, which was a stretch for me because we play with 2 linebackers, but we've got 4 GB linebackers in the squad. And ironically, none of those 4 GB linebackers started in the final. So that's the that's the standard we're talking about. You know, it's a ridiculously talented group, and so from my perspective, as someone who played as a DB, never played as a linebacker, I had to bring my knowledge up really, really quickly in the start of the year to make sure that I was effective as a coach. And you know, while I think I'm fortunate that I've got guys like Stu Robinson Irish, for example, who's an absolute encyclopedia of football as a player there, who can actually step into Jules and be like, let's do this, and actually across the group with guys like Real Horton, Jack Watson, these guys, they're all guys who are coaches in their own right for Uniball or whatever, who can step into drills and give their own pointers based on how they play.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, the group was successful wasn't because I coached it, it's because we had a really successful group.
Yeah, and Irish was basically a coach when he was playing.
Yeah, I mean, Irish,
like,
is,
he'd lay you out and tell you what you should have done differently.
Yeah. I mean, I think Irish is probably one of the best positional coaches in the country. He coached the year we won it the first time, he didn't play because of injury. He coached our D-line. He focused on the edge rushers. Coached our D-line, and you know, you look at our D-line now, Cade Macon, GB, Joe Boston, GB.
Yeah.
We've got Emmanuel Yami, I've butchered his surname there. We've got Emmanuel in the interior, GB under 19. I'm going to be missing people. I mean, you've got guys like Charlie Dixon in there. Like, just absolutely, it's a ridiculous unit.
Yeah.
And he went and coached that unit. You know, and having him in the linebacker core is invaluable to us.
Is there anyone, I guess this is coming towards the end of it now, but is there anyone that you want to give a massive shout out to that's helped, you know, from start, when you, you know, from the start, developed with you, enjoyed the ride with you? Chance to give them the shout out.
So risky, isn't it? Because if I forget someone.
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing you under the bus.
Thank mum, dad, and God, and then just leave it at that.
I mean, it was weird this year not having JD as part of the team.
Where's JD go?
Well, he retired, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
Retired. Uh-huh. He won one and retired. JD, yeah. What was really cool actually is that JD made the last tackle in the final in 2022, and that was his last
play. Oh, that's nice.
He was like, I've made the last tackle on the last play of the Brit Ball final. I've just won the Brit Ball. I'm off. See ya. And I was like, see you later, buddy.
Yeah, it's like the end of a movie.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, JD, when we first took over the club in 2012, it was JD was one of the people we were in with. from a coaching perspective, it was me and JD at women, it was me and JD at under 19. So there's loads of people. And I mean, that original committee, guys like Verity, Alan Mead, people like this, Trigger used to have taken over since. I mean, me and Luke fall out more or less every week. but for my sport, because I was DC last year and I was head coach and special teams coordinator this year, I know I can't slack as a coordinator, because I know how much Luke's going to do. I know Luke's going to have classroom sessions, you know, YouTube classrooms specifically for the positional groups, scout. He's doing all this, so I know I have to do it.
Yeah.
And so as much as, you know, we fall out, practice actually is someone to drive you on. It's incredible. You know, guys like Sam, people joke it's the Samchester Titans. but, you know, as a quarterback, he's phenomenal. As a recruiter, he's phenomenal. As a leader. On the defense as well, some guys have just been invaluable. Guys like Sam Fossey, the guy who came in kind of in the COVID year, just a phenomenal person to have around the team. Al Murdoch actually probably is
Coach
the one.
Murdoch's still going, Murdoch. Yeah.
Yeah. Al was playing.
He just can't go, hey, can he? I just can't leave it.
When I was a rookie, I was playing safety. I was behind him on the depth chart. That was 20 years ago. Yeah. Al's now in doing under his kid's now going to play under 16s. He's going to coach under 16s. He's still coaching our DBs. It was funny last year. Me, him, and Knox, the receiver coach, were staying in. This is surreal, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're sat in the hotel with the Brickball Trophy, having just beaten London Warriors, and he's like, oh, "I'm sorry. How did this happen? Like, what's going on here?" Obviously, I'm going to be forgetting people, but yeah, there's a core group of guys. I mean, from my perspective, there's a core group of guys that I met when I was under 16s coach. You know, your Max Gracie Ains coach, your Tom Jones, guys like this. There's about a dozen guys that played under 16s who played in the Brickball team. There's probably about 20-25 in total that played youth junior football for us. So there's still a core of about a dozen guys that played in D2 with us. Yeah. Guys like Fatneck and guys like this.
Yeah.
Like Googie's still around.
He doesn't like being called that anymore, does he?
Oh, it's John actually.
it's just John now.
Just John.
It's John actually.
We can't call him that. He doesn't like it.
I think you see it with, and people comment it all the time, so how tight the Titans are, how tight we are as a
family. It is a family.
And I think it does show, and there's little bits like that. And like at the final, even the final last year, the final was in London, and we had more people in the stand than the London Warriors did. So
that's that says a lot. Yeah.
When you took over as head coach, was there anything that you felt that you had to change massively? Or was there anything that was already in place that you were adamant on keeping going?
There was loads of stuff in place, but I wanted to, just the way I structure practice, for example, the way I plan practice and the way I kind of bring that, the way I run special teams, in terms of you do special teams every single session, EDDs, everyday drills, you implement the same 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like a mental checklist to getting in. Just the way that we always have combat. Culturally, you know, there's a few coaches I really love, like Pete Carroll at Seattle, John Wooden, the basketball coach. They all have the pyramid of success. It's all kind of built around that. So kind of leverage that. We implement our own pyramid of success that kind of we go through the team, and it's evolved a little bit each year, but fundamentally it's the same kind of stuff, you know, always compete, always win. Turning every training session into a competition, or every drill's a competition. Always find a way to keep score in this drill, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
There's always a winner and a loser, and that creates competition, and it creates good, not animosity, that's not the right word. Creates good pressure, kind of good. What's the word looking for?
It's good behaviours, because it translates to game day. Everything's a battle on a game day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the point. Yeah.
Whether you're just a backside blocker and you need to win that block.
Yeah.
Or you're holding up the boards.
Yeah.
Or you're holding up the
holding
boards.
Holding up the boards.
No one holds up the boards.
Adversity is the word I'm looking for. Yeah.
I was fantastic at holding those boards.
Those boards. Yeah. There are people that I've seen try to work out what those boards mean.
I know.
I
the best was when you did it at East Kilbride. That was the best one.
No, it was. Oh yeah, yeah. Going all the way there
for the full game.
Yeah. Five hours of lifting boards up. It's good.
Hey, it's a team game. Yeah. No, we deliberately create adversity in our training sessions. For example, in the final, you know, we blew a 2-score lead in the final to be down going into the fourth. Sideline was so calm because we faced worse situations against each other in training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just on that, is there a game that sticks in your head where whether it's good or bad, like is the one game that sort of goes, that was the game that I'm proudest of, maybe, or a game where you've maybe you've kind of thrown it away a little bit and it kind of sticks in your mind, or are you not that
fortunately only once in 3 years, so
it must be hard to work out where that is.
The Tamworth away game, I mean, that game was frustrating, I suppose, because you know, for example, their goer, the score that ultimately won them the game, we had them pinned, they were punting, we hit the kicker, it went 15 yards, and the very next play they threw a deep bomb over the top. And unfortunately at the time, I think five or six of our starting D had gone out injured. We just lost a corner, and I think we'd moved the safety to corner, and they went over his head and they scored. And even then, though, actually we blocked a punt with like 90 seconds to go, got the ball back on the 20, had three or four shots to the end zone, didn't quite pull it in. So like, even that's still at the back of my mind. I'm like, actually, the first final against London, it was 37-7. They scored because they ran the ball, and it was second and five. And I was actually talking to Irish. I didn't see the holding call, so it was actually second and 15. I thought it was second and five. So we didn't have our pass rush unit on. I had actually pulled our safety over, because they were on the left hash. So I pulled our safety over to the wide side of the field, didn't send any pressure. And then the QB dropped back. I was like, oh, no. And I saw it. I could see it. And you know, Alex Eager got across, missed the ball by about four, and they scored. Had I seen it was second 15, we'd have put our pass rush unit on, rushed and left Eager in the middle field. He probably picks it up and we win the game 37-0. That annoys me.
Yeah.
I think maybe the Bristol semi-final the first year, because it was a tight game. You know, it was a one-score game. It was back and forth. And actually, you know, the way we managed it at the end, Luke in particular, the way he managed it at the end was really good.
That's awesome.
So what's the funniest thing that's happened to you this year? Bear in mind, we've got to keep it family-friendly.
You know what? Dealing with Scottish refs is always a challenge. We played East Kilbride, and in the first 30 seconds of the game, we had three sideline unsportsmen, like me, the OC, me, Luke, and George, the DC. I was stood in the coach's box, and the chains, they were pulling the chains literally across me, and I was like, can you just move the chains forward into the, you know, 2 yard gap you've got between the coach's box and the side of the field? And the ref just started screaming at me in Scottish. Move. I was like, I'm in my fucking coach. But sorry, I've done it again. Flag comes out, and I'm 15 yards on sportsman. I can sideline. I'm like, the game's 30 seconds old.
Pete's got some editing to do this week, but it's fine. No, don't worry.
So, just the nonsense of that, I think.
Nice. We're going to finish it off with a bit of fun.
Yeah.
If you're up for it.
Sure.
2 minute drill.
Okay.
Quick fire questions. So, this isn't going to be Manchester Titans based. This is all NFL based. So, favourite team?
Giants.
Favourite Giants player?
Xavier McKinney.
Ooh, good one, that. Favourite non-Giants player?
Tyrion Matthew.
Oof. Honey
Badger. Honey Badger. Favourite pass player?
Pass player?
Yeah.
Past.
Landon Collins. Although I think he's only just retired.
It counts.
Him or Troy Polamalu.
Oh, yeah, I did. What's more important, a good offense or a good defense?
Defense.
He's a defensive player. He's always going to say that. Last game that you went to?
Giants Rams. Before both teams got good.
Ah,
well, the Giants didn't get good, did they? Before the Rams got good.
Favorite position? It's going to be safety or a defensive player. One.
Well, I like the strong side safety, apex safety, outside back.
Nice.
Which coach influences you the most?
Pete Carroll.
Oh, I like that question. Good one. Yeah. Most overrated player in the NFL?
Oh, jeez. Bijan Robinson, because my fantasy team has. I drafted him in the first round. I traded him.
We can fall out very quickly.
I've seen him traded quite a bit this week.
Yeah. Most underrated player
in the NFL?
Yeah.
Jason Kelce.
I like that. We're underrated.
I think he was, maybe not anymore.
Yeah.
Most overrated team.
Overrated team.
Yeah.
Dallas. Oof. Okay.
Most underrated team.
Cardinals.
Favorite team to watch that isn't the Giants.
Unfortunately, the Eagles.
Oh.
I know, right?
Oof.
Really bad.
Worst team to watch.
Worst team to watch.
Yeah.
Rams.
And then last one, favourite play that you've ever seen?
Live?
Well, just, yeah, live on when you watch it on
the telly. Well, at that Twickenham game, Landon Collins got pick six for the Giants.
What? Not live then?
Not live. I don't know.
Odell's catch?
A David Tyree then for the helmet catch.
Okay. If you could have any Titans player eligible for fantasy football, who would it be?
Max Gracie Ainscoe.
Because?
I mean, what a beast.
Drop it. I remember playing flag with him and he did never drop the ball.
I mean, there's a few players. I think Max and Tom Jones, had they been born in the US, would probably. They'd have certainly played D1 college.
Who are the Titans MVPs this year? Give them a shout out.
Yeah.
Well, you've got to say Sam, I suppose, haven't you? It's really, really hard because it's a team of incredible players. If I think about the defense, you've got guys like Sam Fosse, Ricky Delver at DB, and that's missing out a chunk of guys. The whole linebacking core, Jack Watson, Calvin Wong, AK, Irish, Rio. I'm missing people there for sure.
The offense.
No, I mean, I defensively, Cade and Joe, and in the interior, guys like Charlie, just absolute beasts. Offensively, just the receiving corps are joking. You Fresh, Max, Anushka, Scott Higgins, the most underrated player on the team, the nicest guy on the team also.
Scott was playing, you might have retired, but Scott was playing in my final year, and he is really nice guy.
We had
I think it was his first year and we had him on kit return.
Yeah, he's just a great guy. And he's moving back down south, so he's one of the guys. I think he's actually probably going to end up playing against us, unfortunately. Oh. Yeah. We'll see where he lands. The whole line are just a joke. Johnny Morehouse in the centre is just the most disgusting human I've ever met in my life.
in more ways than one.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just the running back climbing, you're going, Joe Nick is just an absolute beast. But then you've got, Axel, you've got John, you've got guys like Craig Owen behind him who kind of can pick up.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone run into contact more than Axel.
Axel.
He makes no effort to avoid a tackle.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely missed guys out there, and apologies, but it's our team is stacked from top to bottom. Alex Cooper, actually, another one. Alex Cooper's probably the best tackle I've ever seen in my life. He moved for the team from linebacker to safety this year. Really unselfish, but there's just guys everywhere.
Oh, good. Awesome. Well, to finish with,
yep.
Talk to us about the Giants.
Giants.
How you think the season's going so far?
Well, it's been
and your hopes for next year.
Oh, come on, mate! Don't do this to him. He's been nice to come on the pod, and now you're making him talk about that.
Well, he's got to talk about his own team, hasn't he? Like, I'd have to talk about the Bengals and how much of a horror show that would be.
And it's been an absolute disaster, hasn't it? Because last year
talk about next year.
Last year we were plucky good, and we made the playoffs, and we looked like things were moving in the right direction with the coaching staff. There's no way we should have paid Daniel Jones that amount of money. Whether we thought he was the future or not, I think it's a proven fact in the NFL that you cannot pay a quarterback and a running back. You can pay one or the other. The Chiefs do it really well. The Eagles have started doing it.
The Chiefs do it by not paying any running back.
You just draft a running back and then
rinse him,
trade him away.
And get rid.
I mean, the Eagles have just done it with Miles Sanders, got rid of him, managed to get Swift in, who's still on his rookie contract from Detroit. I think you can have one or the other, you can't have both. I think we should have paid Saquon. I think then there's receivers we could have signed. Hopkins, for example. We could have signed Hopkins had we not paid Daniel Jones all that money. I think now we've kind of tied ourselves into Jones, because even if we cut him, there's still 34 million of dead cap space there, which is a disaster. That said, I can't believe we didn't let the Patriots score. I don't know why we're not tanking like crazy. I think the coaching staff is still good. I think there's still the core of a good defense. I thought we signed good players on defense. Karika from Indy, and we signed Simmons from the Cardinals. I thought were good pickups. The secondary, I think, has got some young players in there, especially at corner, and that could progress. We've still got Beast in the middle at D tackle. I think Kayvon
Thibodeau.
Is, I think, can still be a great player at rush end. So the pieces are there.
He seems to be developing quite nicely this year.
But the Giants' Achilles heel for about the last 10 years has been defensive back, and we just refuse to address it.
Do you think that you will address it in the draft next year?
Well, no, almost certainly.
Or do you think
drafting either Harrison or someone? I don't know.
Yeah. someone else for Daniel Jones to overthrow.
Yeah.
Or not, if he can get back on the pitch with his broken neck.
Do you think, with your offense, I'm going to pick on one player because I actually really liked him in college, and that's Jalen Hyatt. Do you see him developing into a key piece?
I hope so.
With Wondell Robinson as well.
Yeah, because we've had him, like guys like Darius Slayton. Like even with Kadarius Toney, we keep having these receivers have so much promise. I think, like, I mean, Evan Engram came and left and actually looks the part now at Jacksonville, which is frustrating. Sterling Shepherd's kind of the end of his career, but he was one that was always, next year Sterling Shepherd's going to be great.
Yeah.
Next year. So I hope so.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, but you also did get rid of Tony at the right time because he went to the Chiefs and then just developed concrete hands.
True, yeah. Well, I mean, but when he was a player that was, everyone's like, well, this is going to be, this kid's going to be great for us. And, you know,
if you can keep him fit.
Yeah, but the problem is, though, you know, it doesn't matter who you have from the centre if you can't protect him.
Yeah.
Irrelevant. Like, I mean,
yeah.
The reason that Saquon's so beat up is because he just gets hit
relentlessly.
Really, yeah. He never. There's no. He's just running through contact every time. So.
Yeah. When teams know you've not got a QB or a proper QB, you know it's going to be Saquon.
You can. Like, teams can stack the box against us because they're not concerned. I mean,
Danny DeVito's all right.
Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
I mean,
hey, Tommy.
But I'd rather what? I mean,
for a 20-odd-year-old that starts his mum make his bed, he's all right, isn't he?
I mean, it's a joke that we had Geno Smith on the books for 4 years and actually went to Seattle and led the league in passing, didn't he? I mean,
he's having that drop-off year now, though, isn't he?
Yeah, true. I do think they could have cut Jones. They could have given it to, mine's been completely blank, who the other quarterback is, who's injured as well.
It's Tyrod Taylor.
Tyrod Taylor.
They could have paid Saquon, given it to Tyrod, and then we could have probably traded up for a QB. Or QBs out there.
Well, there's been loads of QBs moved this year. I mean, you could Minshew moved. Wentz is out there.
Wentz, yeah. Well, I mean, Cam Newton's still free agent.
Cam Newton, you could have had.
Why weren't we in for Aaron Rodgers? I mean, in hindsight, you got injured, whatever. But if you think you've got a team with all the parts, then why not go and sign?
Well, because Aaron Rodgers wanted to bring all of the Packers with him.
Well, that's fine.
And maybe you weren't interested.
That's fine. He could have brought a couple of line with him.
In Randall Cup.
Yeah.
H.
That's awesome. It's been a pleasure having you.
No, thanks for coming on.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for bringing the trophy.
No, it's okay, yeah.
Keep an eye out for the socials because there will be a picture of me and H and John with the trophy.
And his ring is on there as well.
Yeah. My championship ring, not...
championship ring. Yeah, let's make that clear.
Yeah.
That took a turn.
Yeah, we are starting OnlyFans for John's ring.
Yeah. but yeah, awesome to have you on. It's good to see you as well because I haven't seen you for... many years now.
Years.
So, yeah.
Pre-COVID, I think.
Yeah. It's good. And good to see the Titans are doing well. And we were planning to go down and watch them this year.
We definitely
so
will.
We'll get some stuff
going. Podcast live.
It's not a bad shout.
That is quite good.
Overtime live.
You'll have to do a sideline interview, though.
I'm fine with that. You can mic me up.
We've nailed the date.
We'll be ticking the explicit box.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
That's going to be a Tamworth away. I feel like that's going to be the game for you to go live with.
I think that's got a European game written all over it.
Yeah, we should come on your European trip.
As it stands, we may or may not be going to Sweden. So.
Hopefully, you'll get some sponsors and you can get over there and it's going to be awesome. Are you going to be streaming those games?
Yes. So we're going to be streaming. All our home games will be streamed this season.
Amazing.
And then the European games get streamed.
Amazing. Follow the Titans on your socials. If
anyone wants to play, get in touch with them.
Yeah.
Always looking for new players.
Also, I mean, especially youth junior, you know, we have, if you're 14 and above, you can play contact or flag open football, women's team as well. You know, find our socials. We're recruiting right now. Get involved.
Awesome. Brilliant, mate. Good to
see
you. And we'll see you soon.
Cheers.